Today I'm going to talk about this idea of Uber gravity and then do the cosmology of the model and then try to convince you that it's a good model to do cosmology. So the first part is more theory and about the idea of ensemble average. I guess it's the way we do physics. We just, by the way, it's Trieste, or the Italian, obviously. When we do theory, we just look at the sunset and it's beautiful. We do, we just care about theoretical consistency of the model. But then there is a beautiful sky above us, and then we have these observations. So we should be careful about the observations. So when we do physics, I guess it's just a communication between Earth and the sky, in some sense. So I do gravity. So the idea can be implemented in particle physics, for example. I will give you a word there, but I am working on gravity. So at the theory side, we have this Einstein-Hilbert action. It seems it's very good. I mean, it's consistent. It can describe the gravity. Somehow it's beautiful. And it could predict for us the deflection of light by the sun or the other examples. Yeah. But there are a few problems there. One of them, which is important and I guess very fundamental, is the cosmological constant problem. Niyayesh here, I guess, maybe Lee Smolin and other people, they are working on this problem. And it's a kind of fine-tuning problem. Up to my knowledge, there is no answer for this question. But from the observation side, we know we are in an accelerating phase of the universe. And GR cannot explain that. So what we do, we just add a cosmological constant to GR to explain late time acceleration of the universe. And the model that we are working with that is this vanilla model of lambda CDM. I put this end here, and finally I will tell you why. We worked with this lambda CDM model. But we have a few problems. There are a few tensions in the observation. We have this H-naught tension that I will tell you in more details, which is in the background. The prediction of lambda CDM and the observation seems are not compatible. Actually, they are tensions, so they are few sigma. So maybe they are systematics. The other one is sigma 8 tension, which is at the linear perturbation level. I mean, it's about matter power spectrum at the linear regime. The other ones are void phenomena, missing satellite problem at the nonlinear regime of lambda CDM. In the theory side, as I said.
What is the void phenomenon? What is the problem there?
We expect, I mean, lambda CDM predict more mass inside the void. I mean, so more massive objects inside the void. And then in the theory side, as I mentioned already, we have this cosmological constant problem. And for me, there is one more question, that why GR as a unique theory, it should be unique and should explain our universe. Let me remind you a phrase by Einstein, that what really interests me is whether God had any choice in the creation of the world or not. And this quotation relates to that if GR is unique or not. So I will tell you a real story now. At the first day, God asked for a theory, because he or she wanted to run a simulation, which is our universe. So he asked for, I'm not sure, maybe she, asked for a theory. And thinkers, philosophers at that moment, they worked hard, and then they brought the models. And thanks to Tessa Baker, there is a leakage of information, so we know all the models. So the question now is, if we were God, and we had these choices, why we had to choose just one of them, which is GR? You can see a lot of things here. I mean, different kind of modified gravity, inspired by a string theory and higher dimensions, these non-local models, these higher order gravities, F of R, the massive gravity, which is now very famous.
There is nothing GR there.
There is?
Is there a GR?
no, it's GR. Yes, there is no GR. Yeah. And even these non-action approaches, emergent gravity, so on. So the question now for me is, if I had these bunch of models, which are theoretically consistent, what could I do to run a simulation? My answer is that just taking average. You should take care of all of these models and then take average over all of them.
Okay.
If you do that, I mean, yes, why? If you do that, then you will get, in an optimistic.
It's democracy, right?
Yes, it's kind of democracy, but yeah, if we are optimistic, we reach to a unique model at the end. So we can explain why that model is unique. If we can do that, then we can answer the question, the first question, that we have a unique model and we cannot have any other models, so nature picked that one.
What if there's no unique model?
Sorry?
What if there's no unique model?
Then we should ask this. Why not just one of those models happens to be correct? And the others have absolutely nothing to do with it.
Exactly. The point is that when you say it's correct, you compare it with data, maybe, you know? But when you're at the theory side, you don't know which one is correct. All of them are correct in the sense that they are theoretically consistent. So when you are at the theory side without looking at the outside, at the sky, you don't know which one is correct.
But you need to establish some principles, philosophical principles that you're going to use to guide your selection of.
Exactly. Like,
causality as an example.
Yes, all of them. I mean, here, all of them satisfy causality.
One? Satisfy
causality? No, all of them. All of them.
One?
Yeah.
So the claim is that these are all consistent.
Consistent models. They are all consistent.
There's one missing.
One?
It's a model missing.
Which one?
It's called tensor vector scalar gravity.
Here we go.
No,
that's Tensor.
It's a
Pakistan. Okay, maybe we should ask Tessa to add to his. Yeah. But if you do that, you come to here. I mean, the answer is, I mean, if you say no, there is no other choices for gravity, it's just a GR, then you should tell me that why it is unique. Otherwise, I always can ask that. I have other models, and then why? Mathematically, I can write the other models. But if you say yes, then you should tell me that why, how you can see the other models. If the other models has been used in the nature, how I can detect them, or how I can observe their effects. And to be honest, there is another option that you can say that it's not a well-defined question. The reason that I added this one here is that because I talked with my colleague in philosophy department, and after 1 week they asked me what is the question. So, okay. My proposal is like this: just taking the average over all of the models, and at the end you have just one model which is the average one. And okay, I can say one word here. The idea is based on this paper, but there was a similar idea by Erkan Yahmet et al. They did more or less, they had the more or less same idea. The paper name is N-Naturalness on its archive version, but in its PRL version they had to change the title. But their idea is that we have different a standard model of particle physics, and each one is labeled by Higgs mass. So they have different Higgs mass. Yes.
In physics, a theory is finally decided by whether it agrees with observational data.
Yes.
So the theory that agrees with most observational data is, for a time, the correct one.
Exactly. So what I am...
It's not a matter of energy. It's just, this is how you do physics.
Yes. So because of that, what I do, I will tell you that how this model, this idea, can be checked with the observation, and if it is better than a standard lambda CDM or not.
You haven't mentioned dark matter.
Yes. I assume that we have dark matter.
No, but why should you? You haven't observed it, except through gravity.
I think that's a separate issue.
Yes, but... For this,
that's really separate. Right? He's not going to talk about dark matter. It's not about dark matter.
It's just about dark energy. But you're right. I mean, we can do the same. We can think like
what observations still haven't produced evidence for dark matter.
Yeah. No, definitely, I agree.
Possibly never will.
I don't know, but
never
yeah.
Will. This is an important issue.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I agree. But for this talk, I just focus on dark energy. So I assume we have cold dark matter. And then what they do, they just say we have these different types of standard model of particle physics, and they have a reheton that reheat to different models with different probabilities. The philosophy is same. What I do, I have these models, I associate a probability to each model, and then take average. This one is in the abstract way. Let me just go to this slide. I assume there is one more assumption, that because I want to do calculations. So I assume each model has a Lagrangian. Okay. So for each model, I associate this kind of probability, which is inspired by path integral or canonical ensemble in statistical mechanics. So I have e to the minus beta Lagrangian. This one is normalization factor. Beta for me is a constant. So if you give me all the Lagrangians in your model space, I take the average and I say we should work with this average model. For the first exercise, I started with higher order gravity. In four dimensions, we have Ricci scalar and Gauss bonnet. The other ones are identically zero, and you get this specific Lagrangian in the family of f of R and G. Let me say one thing here, that this f, I can't write it. People studied this family of f of R and G, and then they showed that they showed this condition should be satisfied if you want to have a stable theory. And it's interesting because if you go to literature, because this one is very complicated, the R and Gs are everywhere. But if you go to literature, they just took these examples, which are trivially satisfy this condition. But then, at this point, you could ask a question that if I started with R and G, and I have another model which is theoretically consistent, I had to put it back in the model space and take average again. Okay? So to answer to that question, I generalized the model space, and I worked with this all the analytical functions of...
Sorry, can you go back? So you're saying that this model is not theoretically consistent?
It is.
Does it satisfy that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Non-trivial.
Exactly. It is, yes. And it's interesting because, I mean, as I said, in the literature, people just consider these two models. But then I generalized the model space to all the analytical functions of f of r. I picked this basis, but I will tell you about the basis, that the model is not sensitive to the basis.
Well, you can show that every F of R gravity theory can be mapped into Brent sticky.
Yes, exactly.
So you're checking Brent sticky.
Yes, if you go to Brent sticky, it means, with this idea, it means that you should take average over all the potential, possible potentials. Yeah. Yes.
Maybe I'm jumping ahead, but is it clear that this is a well-posed problem? And when you get your,
What do you mean by well-posed problem? Maybe,
initial value formulation of your equations, is it a well-posed problem? What you get your Lagrangian, I guess from there you can derive, you sort out some probability distribution for each model, and then you can derive your field equation.
Yes.
So then the question is, those field equations, can you, or will you say something about the hyperbolicity of those equations, and if it's a well-posed problem, or this is just a exercise to
at the end,
further. Mm-hmm.
Yes, what I should do, I will let you know in next equation what is the Lagrangian. And then you're right, I should go for the equations of motion and try to see if it's consistent or not. Today I'm doing something, I go for a toy model, and I will show you that it's consistent.
But F of R models, they are Brent sticky, they're just a scalar tensor theory, so they are all well posed.
Yeah, but I also saw some Lovelock gravity there on the front.
Right. No,
but
yeah.
It's not going to do that.
And not all of those are well posed, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yes. So for that one was the first example that I tried to do.
Yeah.
Okay. But now because I go for n to infinity, I am just in F of R models. There is no Gauss bond anymore. So model space is just this F of R models. And then you're right, I should satisfy some conditions. For example, if you have F of R for dark energy, you should satisfy F prime, F comma R and F comma R greater than zero for R greater than R naught, which R naught is the cosmological constant. If you want to have a well-behaved F of R model without instability, you should satisfy those conditions. And this model can satisfy. So this one is this F of R model. I introduce R bar, which is, R over R naught, which is a dimensionless Ricci scalar. So what we have now, I have an R naught, and I have a beta as free parameters. Okay. If you plot this Lagrangian, you get this blue solid line. This dashed line is GR, is Ricci scalar, and this blue line is the F of R. And it has some nice properties, no? It's vanishing at some point. It has some universal properties. And I will tell you what is the universal. What does it mean, universal? When I say universal. For higher curvatures, for a large Ricci scalars, it coincides with GR. For curvature less than R naught, it's always vanishing. There is a regime, intermediate regime, which is the gravity is always stronger than, by stronger I mean it's higher than GR, and there is a sharp transition always at R naught. And I say it's universal, and I mean if you change the parameter beta, you get the same result. If you change the basis, and if you didn't start with R, R square, I started with R, R square, R cube, and so on. But you could say, I want to start with R plus R square plus R to 5, or some other basis. If you change your basis, the result is exactly the same. So for me, they are universal properties. So it's exactly what I mentioned. If I can show that this true for all the f of r models, then this model, which I named ubergravity, this ubergravity model is universal. So it's unique in this sense. A few other words. This vanishing gravity here at less than r naught, less than a scale, reminds me this degravitation. Because the idea of degravitation is just vanishing gravity for a scale, less than a scale in curvature or higher scale in length. No? But OK, we should be careful. It's similar to the idea, but if it degravitates or not, we should be careful and we should consider it and we should study. So just one more point in the theory side is this Lagrangian here gives you exactly the same pattern like this blue curve, OK? But it's much simpler than ubergravity. And it has one nice property. If you go for this sector, r less than r naught, you can see that this one is the equation of motion, the trace of equation of motion. And for r constant, we don't have this box over r. So the result is like r to r naught equals to this fraction. Okay? But then when n goes to infinity, it's nice because if n goes to infinity, the right-hand side always is going to 1. So it doesn't depend on t. Maybe we can think that maybe solving cosmological constant problem can be, I mean, in other words, the result of gravity is robust to the value of that energy momentum tensor in some sense.
But that's in this regime of r less than r.
Exactly.
If you're the opposite regime.
Exactly. And I assume that we don't have any other matters. So, I mean, it doesn't solve the cosmological constant problem really, but maybe it gives us some clue that maybe we should think to solve both old and new cosmological constant problem together by just having a kind of gravity which is very robust to energy momentum tensor of vacuum. Okay, let me skip this plot. Now I switch to the cosmology of the model and then try to see if it works with the nature or not, with the observation. So I have this ubergravity in theory side, and I will try to see if I can address this H0 tension, sigma 8 tension. And for this talk, I'm not going to nonlinear regime, but at the end we should studying nonlinear regime void phenomena and missing satellite problem. This work has been done with Shant, who is a faculty member at Sharif University of Technology in Tehran, and he was a postdoc at PI a few years ago. This blue plot is, I had this f of r, I go to the equation of motion and take trace of the equation of motion. So in the right-hand side, I have the trace of my model. And in the left-hand side, I have the trace of energy momentum tensor. Okay. So and this dashed line is minus Ricci scalar, which is trace of Einstein tensor. You can see what happens here. If your density on the right-hand side is above a critical density, what you see is exactly the same as GR. And if your density on right-hand side, I mean energy momentum density, is less than a critical density, what you see is exactly a Dossiter phase. Because always you get R equals R naught. So based on this, we introduced this toy model. It says there is a critical density in our model. If your critical density is less than if your density is less than critical density, you are always in pure Dossiter, and your model doesn't care about the density anymore. And if you are above a critical density, you always have GR plus CDM. So we name it either lambda or CDM, and this one for who are familiar with logic. This one is X or symbol. So what we have for a density, either we are in just pure CDM, or we are in pure dosita. So there is no transition. I mean, there is no redshift. There is no era that we have both dark energy and dark matter. Okay. Going back. Okay. Based on this idea, I will try to do cosmology. And let me first mention this H-naught problem very briefly in one slide. If you look at the data, these red ones are from high redshifts from CMB. And these blue data points are from this ladder measurements, distance ladder measurements, which are low, which are measured in low redshifts. And you can see we have a tension between these two data. Yeah?
The Dark Energy Survey.
Yes.
Has published a paper.
Yes.
Recently.
Yes.
In which they claim that the tension has been reduced because they have much more accurate data through weak lasers.
Is that
I guess it's sigma 8.
Is that H naught? Is that Hubble tension or is that the sigma 8?
The tension of H naught.
But I mean, Dark Energy Survey doesn't measure H naught, does it?
I think so.
I have a plot. I mean, I don't know if they claim anything about H naught, but they have a claim about sigma 8.
That the tension.
Yes, I have a plot from.
Omega sub M.
Omega M, exactly. I guess it's sigma 8. Yeah. Yes, but I guess that one, because they claim that the tension in sigma 8 is reduced.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a plot from their paper. OK, so this one is problem. I mean, the tension. The measurement from low redshift predicts higher H naught compared to measurements from high redshifts, CMB and BAO. Okay. But you can guess. Okay, let me first show this one. Because Rees et al, they, last year, they published this paper. They tried to take care of all the systematics that they already know. I mean, maybe it is systematic, but they tried to remove all the systematics and they report the tension. I mean, there is a 2 to 3 sigma tension. Okay. But our model solves this problem automatically, no? Because for a redshift less than a transition redshift, we always have dosita. So for us, H square is a constant, which is fixed by H not low. And this parameter is R naught in the Uber gravity model. And for redshifts higher than a transition redshift, we have pure dark matter. And we know from cosmology course that it goes like 1 plus Z cube. So we fixed this H naught by Rees et al. Measurement to address the low redshift H Hubble parameter. And then we try to find the best fits for Z plus and omega M plus in the background level. For the background level, we have this comoving distance. And comoving distance for us has two parts. From Z to Z plus, we have just pure dark matter. And when we switch to pure dosita case, H is 1. So we have this simple integral. OK? And if you do that, you get this contour plot. It seems it's a kind of line, but it's OK because we assume that we are in a flat, spatially flat universe. And when you are in a spatially flat universe, BAO and CMB are very restricted to this line. And let me just show one plot from a standard cosmology. You can see the same line here. When you assume that there, you have BAO and you have CMB, always you get a kind of line in the space of omega and H. And for us, because we don't have omega, we don't have H in the space of Z and omega. Okay, and if you add low redshift supernovae, you get this counterplot here. And the best fit is that transition should be 0.445, and then omega plus should be 0.4.
Have you checked that this is a better fit than Lambda CDM?
It's a little bit tricky. The chi-square for our model is comparable to the number of data points. But it's above, it's larger than Lambda CDM. But then there's one point here, because we fixed H0 already, maybe we should make it free as a free parameter and try to fit the data again with three free parameters. Then it's, again, hard because we have three free parameters, they have two free parameters, then we should compare them.
There are statistical methods to compare.
Yes.
If you have different degree.
Yes, exactly. The other thing that we should do, maybe, because we stopped here, the reason is that the large constraints on Lambda CDM is because of perturbation theory. So if we just want to show that our model is not bad in the background level, and it solves H0 problem, and then we should try to do the whole cosmology from, I mean, whole CMB data, all CLs, and try to find the best fit. It's one more free parameter. Yes.
We have to be careful because compare the CNB value of H0 to the local values. The local value is determined by measurements of, with candles.
Yes.
This could be a problem because you're relying on the local measurements being correct.
Yes.
What is the sigma difference? The sigma for the H0 attention?
So I guess it's
3 sigma.
It's supposed to be 3.4 sigma. That's what the gap was, the number from this paper. 3.4 sigma.
3.4. So the story is not complete yet.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe it is just systematic. Maybe just they go for new measurements and then they remove this tension. Yeah. So this one is commoving distance. We didn't, because we had.
Yeah. So you want to claim that you're solving the problem, but it seems that you're making it worse as far as I can tell, because you're saying your chi squared is bigger than the CDM.
Yes, but then we don't know because here we picked this all the supernovae, but for Ries et al, it's just 16 supernovae. So if we want to be very careful to compare exactly our model with Lambda CDM, we should go just for those 16 measurements.
Right. But I mean, whatever you do, you should do the same thing with Lambda CDM and Uber Cosmology and compare the two and see with the same data that's one measure than the other.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for here, Lambda CDM works better. If we have just chi squared. But I mentioned that. We have fixed H0. Maybe we can make it free and then see what happens.
Yeah. There's a paper from Sarkar at Oxford.
Okay.
Which has reanalyzed much more data. Much more data. And they claim that the evidence H0 from supernova is weak, poor. The supernova data, it can be shown to be consistent within your statistics with a million universe, which has no matter.
I see.
So, also the evidence from mutation should be through the Lambda CDM itself, not the supernova data.
The tension? Maybe I didn't understand, but the tension is you had this H0 free parameter in Lambda CDM, and when you fixed it with the data from CMB, you get 69. And then for local measurement, if we assume they are correct, it's 73.
Yeah, so the you're including the supernova data.
Yes. Yes.
That data is not very reliable.
Maybe, but we trust to this et al. Paper. Because what they did, they just analyzed the supernovae. And then this tension is coming from the supernovae data. If you don't include supernovae data, then you don't have the tension, I guess.
Because there's two different sets. There's Lorentz supernovae and Heinrich supernovae. The Hubble measurement is from Lorentz supernovae.
Exactly. I agree. But then this higher redshift, the supernovae, that you can see the error bars.
That's
not
sure.
Yeah.
But if you go to the very low redshift, yes, the slope of your curve is sensitive to the H0.
Yes, exactly.
It gives you the H0. And if you go to beyond, you have to introduce omega lambda. You see supernovas fainter than lambda C. In lambda C.
I see.
Then in your case, you are brighter. Your dashed line.
Yes.
You know, if you go to higher redshift, you are below this. So it measures shorter distance, which means the brighter the supernova should be brighter.
Yes.
They are
but it depends on their redshift, because if you are, I cannot zoom in, but here we are above lambda CDM, which is 0.5.
In order redshift point. To have a consistent, with the data, mm-hmm. you should increase your Z plus value. If you just increase it to the higher redshift, then you will get the.
But it's tricky because I didn't include here in this plot the data from CMB. It's very far. It's at redshift 1,000. And it's very good. The error is very small. So the restriction is coming from this data point. It's just one data point, the distance between us and the CMB. But it's very restrictive. So for this model, I have a slide in the backup slides, but this model, this distance, dashed lines, our model is going up at redshift 20 or something, and then it can touch the peak of CMB at this point. So for our measurement, it's the peak is 201, and then it's the same as the observation from CMB, the Planck data. Okay, and then we included these two data points, BAO data point from Lyman Alpha. What we have is less distance here, so we couldn't touch them actually. It's very hard because if we go up to touch these two data points, then we are going to lose CMB data point. So. I guess I mentioned all of these issues. Just one point. We have three free parameters, omega matter, H naught, and Z transition, and R naught, and beta in the Uber gravity model, the original model, says are fixed, will be fixed by H naught and Z transition. And omega matter is from the matter sector. Yep. So it seems we can say something about H naught tension, but what about this sigma 8 tension?
We just decided you didn't really say anything because you didn't improve chi score.
Yes, I agree. We should just do everything for lambda CDM.
Do the same thing you did for hardware, you should do it for lambda CDM.
Yes, exactly.
The chi score decrease.
Exactly. This one is sigma 8 problem. It says cosmic map reveals a not so lumpy universe. What does it mean? It's a Planck paper. These black curves are Planck data, and these blue and green ones are low redshift measurements. And you can see the best fit for low redshift measurements predict less sigma 8. And this one is this dark energy survey paper a few weeks ago. And they predict the same. This green one is high redshift measurement. And this blue one is low redshift, dark energy saver, BA1J, supernova. And you, again, you have less sigma 8. The tension is less, as they claim, but there is still the tension. What we can say about that? Here we just say, if you remember, we had this critical density. What we should do, we just compare the critical density and the total density and see when our perturbations touches the critical density. If you do that, here I assume the window function, which is a constant, to go from real space to Fourier space. Okay. If you do that, you can see it's very easy to do. Actually, because we know, because when we are in pure dark matter, the background density goes as a cube, a to the minus 3, and then delta is growing proportional to a scale factor. So you can solve this equation for a scale factor and find the redshift that each mode touches the Z transition. And you can get this plot for matter power spectrum. Solid lines are lambda CDM, dashed lines are this Uber gravity model. And you see at redshift 2, both models coincide as they should. Because lambda CDM is in lambda dominant, so there is no cosmological constant for lambda CDM. And for us, it's in pure CDM sector. But then at redshifts, lower redshifts, let's say redshift 1, our model, because remember, transition redshift was 0.5, okay? Our model didn't see, still it's higher than Z transition, so it's still in cold dark matter era. So it collapses more, but lambda CDM predicts less power because there is friction by cosmological constant. But when you are in redshift 0, let's say redshift 0, we predict less power for some modes. The reason is because these modes are in pure Dossiter phase. They are not growing anymore. But for lambda CDM case, they are growing with less amplitude because they have dark matter. Still, they have dark matter. OK? Let me say 2 words about this plot. Here is nonlinear scale, so we are not going to talk about this error. This one is sigma 8 scale. And you can see, at sigma 8 scale, at redshift 0, we predict less power compared to lambda CDM. But we should be careful. I mean, we didn't solve the sigma 8 problem. And the reason is, if you look at these solid lines, you can see the shape is same because lambda CDM is the power spectrum, the matter power spectrum in lambda CDM model is scale independent. But in our scenario, it's scale dependent. So we should be very careful that what does it mean when we are at sigma 8 scale. Because what people usually do, they have data from redshift 0.3 from lensing, for example, and then they just stack it at redshift 0. And then they claim that there is a problem at sigma 8. But it's not the case for us because, I mean, for us, we should reanalyze everything. Because for us, coming from redshift 0.3 to 0 cannot be just by multiplying an amplitude, a constant amplitude. For each mode, we have different amplitude. So we should be careful about that. Yes?
Models. I have a model.
Yes?
If I could, which fits the matter spectrum without dark matter.
Yes.
Gravity is stronger. So the point is that we have to distinguish between the early universe cosmology and the present universe. The present universe, we have to worry about galaxy rotation curves, clusters, and also the matter power spectrum. Because the matter power spectrum determines the correlation between pairs of galaxies statistically.
Yes.
Some theories do not have dark matter present, and others do, like lambda CDM. So How do you account for this? How do you account for the theories we talk about dark matter in the present universe?
In this model?
Yeah, you haven't.
We have dark.
It fits the data.
So that's what is good. I mean, if.
I think John is saying in Uber graph, you have to average over all models, including those that don't have dark matter.
You've left out some
yes.
theory that you're averaging.
Yes, we should do that. I mean, for the.
You've left out a lot of theories. I mean, you've presented a chart that had many, many different theories, but really you're just looking at a particular class of MR theories.
Yes. Because I just focus on FOR models, because as I showed you, there are non-local models, extra dimension, DGP, massive gravity, there are a bunch of models. So it, for the moment, it's just the average over all FOR models.
So you're only concerned about the acceleration of the universe?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, but that leaves out a lot of stuff.
Yeah, they're not going to solve everything, but yes.
There's this ongoing argument about whether galaxies have dark matter or not.
Yes, I agree. It's just two slides, so it's what I mentioned. So we should be very careful that we predict S-scale-dependent matter power spectrum in this model. And then it's it, somehow. It's my concluding slide that we have this model. We studied this H naught tension. We gave few words on sigma 8 tension, but we don't know. We should reanalyze everything again. I didn't say anything about a nonlinear regime. And for me, there is one more question in the fundamental part, that how I should define the probabilities. Because I picked the e to the minus beta Lagrangian, and it's just by hand. So is there any way to make it more fundamental? And then it's the name, that we introduce a model. For now, it's a toy model. And I have to say that Niyayesh and Natasha also are working on this kind of similar model. That if you want a vanilla model of cosmology or chocolate model of cosmology. Thank you.
So before we take questions, you mentioned Nima is going to be here for a couple of weeks, right? And his office is 370. So questions for Nima.
So your model, if you let the beta as the free parameter, that beta is some select temperature.
Yes.
So if you let the beta as a free parameter, and then we know that it changed, for instance, by scale factor, and it doesn't depend on the model yet you have. So the temperature of the universe is changing just by scale factor.
Yes.
Then what do you think that? I just have a short rough calculation. If you go to the lower temperature, you will go to the Einstein gravity, and then at the higher temperature, you have a very complicated gravity.
Yes, and it's not consistent with what we observe, no? Because we observe lambda. I mean, because it's IR modification, so for when we have when temperature is higher, we are in higher redshifts, so we know it was GR. But the reason is that beta is not temperature of the universe. If you want to think about beta as a temperature, beta is temperature in the model space. It's not in the real space. So it's a little bit tricky. If you just, I mean, because it's not consistent with the observation. Because if beta is smaller, it means you have complicated gravity, as you say. So we predict lambda in past history of universe, which is not consistent with the observation.
John?
The new dark energy survey, they've determined W, P over rho.
Yes.
W is equal to minus 1 plus or minus 0.04, it seems to rule out F of R gravities. It means that lambda is a constant. Works.
Yes.
Observation. There's no obvious time dependence.
Yes.
In the acceleration for the equation of state W. I have another question is, does your supergravity have field equations? Do you have Friedman equations?
Yes, we have. Yes, we have. Actually, about this W, here in the toy model, this either lambda or CDM toy model, we have constant W. It's just minus one, because we have just one Dossiter phase. The difference with the standard lambda CDM is that lambda is not there forever. It's just a recent phenomenon. And what was the other one? I forgot the second one.
Lambda CDM is a fixed FRW background.
Yes.
That's the only way GR comes in. All the rest is perturbation theory based on Newtonian gravity.
Yes.
So your hypergravity is Newtonian gravity for cosmology. Fluctuation. So you don't need GR to do lambda CDM, except to get the fixed background.
Yes, I agree in some sense, because we switch between these two sectors, pure Dossiter or GR plus CDM. So what we do, we just go for, even for perturbations, we just say we have these two sectors. Either you are in this dark matter and GR, so you just do gravity. There is no lambda.
So did you include Newtonian gravity in your average?
Newtonian gravity.
Why not? That's all what you need to do early universe.
I assume that GR gives us Newtonian gravity. You know? So I mean, if all of them, not all of them, GR.
Get FRW from Newtonian gravity.
Yes, but then you can write. Can you write it in a covariant way? I don't know.
I think we should discuss this over lunch. I have a feeling.
Yeah.
in the present universe, which you showed already with your healing bars of Mercury, fading of light, rotation curves of galaxies, clusters, all of that stuff.
So those are all high density regions in the GR phase.
We only have merging black holes now,
and there are
gravitational waves.
Also high density.
A lot of gravity theories have already been ruled out by the new LIGO data.
But
yes.
They're all high density.
Don't move at the speed of light between the two detectors.
But
so the observational data today is very important.
Yes.
Uber-gravity.
Yes, and I guess.
I haven't seen that. I haven't seen you say anything about present universe data.
I guess here, for high curvatures, I mean for high densities, we predict same as GR, because it's just GR. The point is that the modification is in IR regime.
I would expect it to be the other way around.
No, it's not.
For high densities.
Right, that's what's not true, but about what he's doing. It's averaging.
So, I mean, if I understand it right, at the end of the day, uber gravity is not so uber because you boil down to lambda x or CDM. Is that right?
Yes.
And that works okay some places and not okay others. So why not just back up and make it a little more uber and tweak the model so it maximally agrees? I mean, wouldn't that be a reasonable approach given the original premises, or have I missed something? Like just throw in more stuff to agree with the data. Why not? Like you haven't done that. Why not?
Yeah. Yes, I have two. I mean, but then it's very complicated. So at the first step, it's just like a first step. I mean, because if I go for other models, for example, in the model space,
yeah.
Let's say Gauss Bonnet,
yeah.
Then it's very hard to, I mean, because for F of R, it's much simpler. Because when
you agree, computationally, yeah. It's simpler. But
yes.
With this, you regard that as a reasonable next step in this approach to, I mean, you want to find the next simplest gravity theory to Uberize or add it into the Uber mix, and then you'd have another parameter and then get a mean. Yeah. I mean, it would seem to me that would be the way to go.
Yes, I agree. Yes, I agree. I mean, for me, I mean, in the theory side, the first step for me, the first question that I want to ask myself is that how I can have this kind of probability in a more fundamental way. And then, yes, what happens if I add more models in the first step? I mean, the initial step. You're right.
So then, maybe you've received this question before. Well, on the one hand, that seems reasonable. On the other hand, are you not subject to the criticism that you can fit any set of data given enough parameters?
Yes.
So how do you escape that criticism?
Yes. The point here...
That's what God likes to do.
The point is, for me, it's that I have just one parameter here. Because, you know, in principle, I could start with the three parameters here.
That's because of the choice of theory you've taken. So if I had, suppose I took the Riemann squared invariant, then you'd
yes.
have another one with that, or the Ricci squared, right?
Yes. Even here, I had three parameters. Because there were these three parameters. Because if R is a correct theory, so alpha R is a correct theory.
Right.
But then I set all of these three parameters to one.
Right.
Yeah. So. It's the point. I mean, I can make them free, but then you're right. If I do, one thing that is important for me is this kind of, this universality. If I change the parameters, and then I kill the universalities, then I don't like those parameters because they don't give me a unique model at the end.
Yeah, I mean, but the data is telling you maybe you don't have a unique model.
Yes, maybe. We should, yeah.
I don't
agree.
I agree aesthetically, sort of speaking.
Well, I guess I think the jury is out on whether the data tells you you don't know. I mean, the data hasn't quite ruled it out.
Yeah.
We don't have exact predictions.
It certainly hasn't ruled it in.
It never rules anything in.
That's too strong, but certainly there is more discord than one would like. Is that a fair statement?
No, I think the statement is that he exactly knows the prediction. I think it's just he has a cartoon of the prediction,
yeah.
But not actual.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and until we actually have those predictions, we cannot say that's through that or anything.
There is
yet
another alternative. So it's called the void cosmology. You sit inside a Lyapunov point, and the solution is an inhomogeneous cosmology. Then you have a radial dependence going from below Z to high Z. And this immediately resolves the H-naught tension for obvious reasons,
yeah.
Because the model predicts that there's going to be a difference.
Yeah.
Low and high and CMB and the local H.
Yeah.
It's published.
Yes, but
many
yes, but then I don't know if their prediction for CMB is good or not. It fits.
CMB, everything.
Okay, so on that note, is there any question from anybody who's not John? Or comments?
Yeah.
Yes,
The results you showed us, was that for one specific set of the PIs, the probability distribution of your models, or you picked several times out of the bag and you know constructed several data sets and we saw like
the probability for the models, you mean?
Yeah.
No, I fixed the probabilities for the model.
And how is that done?
It's
like cherry picked, or you use
not with you.
Oh, okay.
Both confirmed, yeah. But it's another way to do that. I mean, you can just, but it's very complicated. You can just say, I go for free parameters here, and then I put just models, and then just minimize the chi-square for these free parameters with the data. So then you can have the probability for each model.
Then you can fit everything.
Exactly.
Well, that would also pick you out of the most compelling theory, right, as well. The one which has the, you know, the biggest weight. It would be a way of weighting theories, right?
Yes. I mean, I agree you can do that. But then, for example, you cannot get this kind of model. Because for this one, you need to take sum over infinite number of models. So it's not like perturbation theory. This one is a highly non-perturbative property.
Again, for the slides with the raw critical.
With the raw critical?
Yeah, the slides with
this one?
No, even before that?
The
plots,
this one.
Yeah.
Can you just tell me again about this plot? Yeah. This one is. You can push it up if you want. Yeah. I have this F of R model, this Uber gravity model. And then if you go to the equation of motion, it's like x mu nu. And then on the right hand side, I have t mu nu, and it's just trace. This one is x, this one is t. This blue is the trace. This is x. And then for Einstein gravity, it is minus Ricci scalar, as you see here.
This other thing, does that jump in your... Sorry.
Yes.
But that cares about beta, doesn't it?
Not really. Actually, beta is telling us about this region, the width of this region.
Critical.
Sorry?
Beta tells you what rho critical is?
Yes. Z transition and rho critical, yes.
So that's a related thing, partly connected to my last question. Why not just, I mean, this curve is helping you, right? That it agrees at large r and disagrees at small r. So another thing to do is just reverse engineer and figure out the curve you want that gives agreement with everything, and then figure out the F and R that generates that curve. Ugly though it may be, it would work by definition. It would have to work because it's reverse engineered. Why not do that?
I think some people are doing that. It's just F of R. They just invent functions of F of R that think that it is a program.
But then you could just do it within the super approach, presumably. You'd have different coefficients for the probabilities and so on.
I guess the idea is that maybe you have, because I mean, the space of all functions is a very big space. And arbitrary choices could be very arbitrary. And here the idea is that maybe you have more well-defined choices in the space of all functions.
Except it doesn't fully agree with the data.
But that's the real question.
Yeah.
That's why I said if you go backwards. Anyway, okay.
Good. If there are no more questions, let's thank Dima again.
Thank you.